Welcome to a mini-cast of In the Deep. I'm your host, Catherine Ingram. The following dialogue on the challenge of romantic love occurred in a session of Dharma Dialogues in Los Angeles in about 2003.
Any of the new people have any questions, anything to say? Yes. What's your name?
Byron.
Oh, so we talked on the phone.
Yes. I was attracted by the ad on the radio because you said that love was the one power that lasts.
Yes.
And the possibility of living with a broken heart. So I really came tonight with a question, but I've been sitting here trying to formulate it. I would just solicit some help because probably it's a common question that everyone has. I have found, the search for a love of another person in one's life can be quite challenging and all the associated issues. And then I question, what is it that I'm really longing for? What is it that I'm really searching for? Okay, it's easy to perhaps say, I'm just looking to find my true self, or I'm searching for God, or searching for union with the infinite, whatever you'd like to call it. But this one particular question has come up recently, and this might be of some interest. I found that I love very, very easily. It's my personality. I fall in love. I meet someone, I love them, within a week or two. So.
And are you speaking about romantic love?
Yeah, romantic love.
Every other kind of love.
And I find, interestingly enough, I always say this, that even like if I need a new male friend,
yes.
If I feel a connection, I feel very close to them immediately.
Yes.
It's just my
Your way
of drawing myself. But then I've questioned, well, am I doing this for some kind of acceptance or some kind of perhaps even ego gratification to know that I love and can be loved in return? Anyway, so the question is that perhaps I have loved easily and then I receive love in return quite easily as well. But then it doesn't seem to last, and it doesn't go on to a marriage or a long-term relationship. So I actually heard someone say, not to me in particular, but it resonated, that perhaps when one does this, you find someone, you love them, but yet you're not really willing or able to commit to them. And perhaps the reason you're doing this is you select people, or you find people, or you're comfortable with people to whom you are not able to commit, so that you don't have to suffer the possibility of rejection. So therefore you go on, perhaps, I don't know, it's been a short time for me, but through a series of these non-committal but very deeply loving relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that's the question I came with tonight.
What is the question?
That may be more of a commentary, but the question is that what's happening? That you may love someone easily and then not commit, or find someone you don't have to commit to, so that you don't have to suffer through the possibility of betrayal or rejection?
I mean, certainly that sounds like a possibility.
Yeah.
But only you can really know what's going on with you. Only you can know. I mean, this domain of romantic love is so highly charged and complicated, And my inclination is always to point people to their own wholeness first, right? So I would say to you, you only really have the one thing to be cognizant of, and it's what we're speaking about tonight. It's the aspect of you that is fine, that is whole, that is unstained and untouched by your story. Not to take away the story, but just that it doesn't diminish the essence, the fundamentalness of you. Like when Stan was speaking about coming in here, and it's like this remembrance of, oh, that's right, that's the essence of me. To really get comfortable in that as much and as quickly as you can, right? And then, you know, see what's left or see what comes from that vantage point. It may be that the truth is you don't do long-term relationships. It may be that's the truth. But you'll know that from your own wholeness. You understand what I'm saying? Or it may be that in this wholeness, in this feeling of okayness in your own skin, it does somehow free up old patterns or whatever, diminish the fear. Because when you're actually feeling whole in your own skin, the coming and going of somebody else, while it can hurt, no doubt, but it no longer will collapse you. It no longer will really be that scary, right? You start to see everyone's going to go anyway in time, and so are you. So, you know, that gets loosened up as well. But moreover, the main thing I want to say is that you will come into your own authenticity in a really strong, clear way. And if it's true for you that you don't do long-term relationships, then you rest in the dignity of that. And you stop laboring under a story that says you should be other than as you are. You know, we all don't have to be cookie cutter in the long marriage thing, you know. It's a very arbitrary, socially imposed idea on a bunch of animals that, as we know, aren't that great at it, you know.
Well, I was married for 23 years. And
were you?
Yes, I was.
Oh,
I was
my God. Well, what are you talking about?
It doesn't count anymore.
Okay.
No, so that's the model that I'm relating to.
I'm relating
to the model of having
the next 23-year, okay,
committed relationship. So
gosh.
Then when I was set free from that, I assumed that it would happen again.
Yeah.
You know, I assumed that was my pattern, or that was my destiny, or my life script, or whatever.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is staying in really your deep truth of who you are, which, you know, cannot predict the future, but is very much connected to the now, you'll just watch and see what happens. And I'll use this phrase again, because it's an important one. You will rest in the dignity of your own experience of life. And I recommend, I'm not speaking just to you in this, of course, you know, lots of people, another aspect of the way that they labor under, you know, concepts, is they think their life should look differently. And a lot of it is conditioned by society. You know, that you should have been doing something else, or you should have done this or that or whatever, you know, and you should have had, you know, the marriage and the kids and whatever. And if that happens to be one's destiny, oh, so fabulous, you know. But if it happens not to be, then what a shame to fight against it all the way to the end, you know. What a shame to not sort of inhabit the truth of your own life and who you are and what you are, and making no apologies about that. So sitting again, relaxing into your own, you know, deep water and seeing how it looks, you know. My grandmother, all of my grandparents are dead now, but one grandmother was the last to go, and I rarely went home to Virginia to visit, maybe once or twice a year. But every time I would see her, she was the woman who had like a miserable marriage and she was basically a slave. She had 9 children. They were very poor, very, very poor. And she had a really, you know, tough life. But every time I would see her, she would say, "When are you going to get married?" is there anybody on the, you know, just... And I always felt I was disappointing her, you know, for the longest time when I would have to say, "Oh, no, I'm not married yet, and no, I'm not getting married, and no, there's no one who's going to be marrying me, it seems." And she would, you know, kind of, you know, shake her head and say, "You know, well, you're getting older," and I would have this kind of mini collapse. But after a while, you know, I would walk in there and I would, the collapse wouldn't be there anymore. I would joke with her about it, you know. I mean, I would just joke with her about it. And I would never, ever say to her, you know, "Why would you want me to be in the same predicament you've been in?" but I would just joke with her about, you know, my own way of seeing it. And she kind of, over time, you know, she would still ask me, but she would not have the sort of disappointment factor going with it as well. But it's those kinds of moments that condition us very, very strongly, you know, that, and all of the media and the advertising and you know, the society we live in, it's a story that is very, very strong. Just like I was saying, the biological story is very strong.
Well, but unfortunately, men are conditioned in the opposite direction to not get married and to hook up and to have short-term relationships. And I've never seen that as a viable lifestyle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I've always seen a long-term, stable relationship.
So then what we can say is that what you want is a more long-term, stable relationship. That's what you want. Okay, now the truth of it may be that, well, that's a lovely thing, and if you can have that at some point, fabulous, good, you know, great. But what if you don't? What if, you know? Can you just say, okay, and dignify your life and enjoy your precious life? You know, you did have the 23 years, and you start to say yes to your life as it is, which is another aspect of freedom. People who are married and in happy marriages, that's very lucky. It's wonderful. It's very lucky, no doubt. But, you know, it's not that common. You know? You know? 50% divorce rate. More, is it? 60%? Something like that. And then of the others that are together, what is the percentage of that are happy? So we're down now, you know, way under the majority of people. It's a noble, wonderful thing to enjoy that, to have that. But if you happen not to have that, can that be okay? Can you just relax? And find intimacy with your women friends, your men friends, the children in your life, the parents in your life. You find, in fact, when you're not in relationship, not in that specific other, the one, the spousal other, you do have a lot more time for all the rest, you know? You know? And you do have a really, you know, you do have a lot of intimacy if you want it. A lot of intimacy, a lot of friendships and connections and very sweet moments with people. I'm not saying you can't have that in relationship. I'm just saying just the time alone, it takes up more time and focus and mental energy. So yeah, you start to feel, instead of deprivation, you start to feel abundance. And then if that comes into your life, it comes in to abundance. It comes into the abundance of who you are, into the largesse of you, instead of, oh God, thank God you've arrived in the nick of time, you know? Right? A kind of desperation. And people walk around as though they're halves, looking for their other half to make a whole. Isn't it? People, you know, traditionally, yeah, they speak of it, my other half. Their better half. Yes, their better half is a famous one. And the notion of soulmate. Oh my God, having that idea, you know, to find your soulmate. You know. These are, you know, ideas of suffering. So you come back to your real sanctuary, to your own wholeness that doesn't need another half. And then you, if you happen to be with another, then you are as two wholes together. And in your wholeness, you will attract more likely another whole, right? You will not be attractive to, and it's a good thing, someone who's super desperate and wants you to fill up their emptiness. Which you can never do. And then your notion of relationship starts to shift. And it's much more about having a friend to celebrate life with and to go through the hard times, but mainly as a kind of walking together, you know, side by side.
Sounds wonderful.
Well, the part I want you to also notice that can sound wonderful is your own aloneness. Start there.
This has been a mini cast of In the Deep with Catherine Ingram. You can find more about my work at catherineingram.com or follow me on Twitter at Kath Ingram. And you can subscribe to our podcasts for free on iTunes. Till next time.